Hello, my name is Kelly Bramblett, and I am a trauma support coach and spiritual mentor who works with people from all over the world who are struggling with unresolved wounding. I do this by gently guiding them to healing, peace, and self-love through my one-on-one coaching. In addition to this, I also write a weekly spiritually based blog and I'm the host of Kelly Bramblett's High Vibe podcast, which can be heard on all major streaming platforms. My mission is to help spread a message of hope to the hopeless and inspire others to heal the collective by first healing themselves. I am a fully certified general life coach, trauma care specialist, law of attraction practitioner, EFT practitioner, and a level 3 Usui Reiki master teacher. My first book, Alchemy of the Phoenix, From the Ashes of Trauma to the Light of Love, was released July 1st, 2020, and continues to offer further support for trauma survivors worldwide. You can learn more about my work by visiting my website at www.kellybramblett.com. Hello, and welcome to this High Vibe podcast episode. I'm really looking forward to today's interview with Nat, who runs the Instagram account, The Mindful Mocktail. And I think I'm really looking forward to it because, as a lot of you may know who have been following me, listening to me, reading my books, etc., I struggled for a really long time with alcohol dependency. So I have loved seeing this explosion of accounts, of content, of coaches who are out there supporting people who are choosing for whatever reason. And I think it's important to also note here that not everyone chooses to be abstinent from alcohol because of addiction. So for whatever reason that people are choosing, whether it's their health, their mindset, wanting to hold a certain vibrational frequency, or because they maybe have struggled with it in the past, I think it's such a great support and resource that we have happening in this movement right now. So just a little bit about Nat. She is the founder of the mocktail recipe blog, The Mindful Mocktail. She creates easy, delicious, non-alcoholic cocktails, provides sober inspiration, and encourages readers to explore a new life with less alcohol. Referred to as a thought leader in the alcohol-free space, Natalie has a passion for making non-alcoholic drinks exciting and delicious. So I'm going to take a quick break and then I will be back to welcome her onto the show. Thank you so much for being here today, Nat. Like I said in the intro here, I'm really excited about learning more about you and the amazing content that you're creating. So I'm just going to jump in and was hoping you could tell us a little bit today about your personal journey and what kind of led you to the creation of the Mindful Mocktail.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for having me, first and foremost. I'm so excited to be here. So my journey with alcohol, I suppose, really starts when I was younger, when I was growing up. I was a child of the 80s. So we grew up around a lot of alcohol. I'm not sure what it's like there over in the States, but in the 80s, I saw my parents drinking a lot. And it's certainly not a blame game or anything like that, because my parents and I have had a lot of conversations about this. And it was literally just what people did. Daily drinking was really not unusual. The environment in which I grew up was a very safe, loving, happy household. There just happened to be alcohol present more often than not. So, you know, every opportunity, I suppose, whether we were celebrating or commiserating, was a good excuse to pop a bottle of champagne or, you know, have a wine, or, you know, there was just always alcohol involved at every celebration. So I suppose, you know, growing up, watching that, you do just assume that is normal, you know, that is what everyone around me did. And so when I got a little bit older and I met somebody and we moved out together, he'd come from a very similar environment where his parents, you know, drank a lot too. And we pretty much just picked up where we left off in our home. So we would go to work, we would come home. If we'd had a great day, that was an excuse to pop a bottle. If we'd had a, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, if we'd had a shit day, that was an excuse to pop a bottle. So yeah, and we were drinking most days, you know, sort of 5 or 6 days out of 7, I would say, at that stage. Not to excess at that point in our lives. So I would have been sort of, what would I have been, early 20s by that stage. And yeah, and we were very sort of, you know, successful people in, you know, both socially and work-wise. So, you know, we were at that party stage of our lives. We would go out sometimes Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. There was always alcohol involved. We were able to then. We were younger. Our bodies processed alcohol differently. You know, mm-hmm. we could get over hangovers really quickly. We didn't have any responsibilities apart from work, you know, work and play, and that was what we did. And we were both very good at our jobs and had good jobs as well. And, you know, looking back, they were some of the best times, really. I mean, we had a ball, to be honest. Like, it was a great time in our life. And then moving on, we separated, and after a few months I met someone else, and he didn't drink at all, really. So he'd come from a family, ironically, because he's Italian, so, you know, you assume that red wine and bread and cheese and pasta and everything flows freely, but it really didn't in his household at all. They didn't really drink much at all. So we had, you know, this interesting contrast, I suppose, between him seeing me drink, you know, with my meal most days, and then him thinking, well, that's really strange that you would drink every day, you know. And I thought he was strange for not drinking, and he thought I was strange for drinking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was this really, it was never, you know, fraught with sort of tension, or we never really thought about it or anything. It was just became quite obvious to me. I remember thinking, for the first time, mind you, okay, well, maybe this isn't what everyone does, you know, maybe people don't drink every day. So our relationship progressed, we ended up getting married, and just, you know, it was just the done thing that when we would go out, he would be the driver and I was always the drinker. And once again, it didn't really seem to affect our lives that much. But then we had kids, and that was when everything really started to change. So I found the transition to motherhood really, really challenging, like most people do. But I would say for me, it really didn't come naturally at all. I thought that it would. I was, you know, a bit of an overachiever, I suppose, when I was growing up, and things generally like came fairly easily to me. And then when motherhood didn't, I didn't know what was going on. It was really a shaky time. And, you know, looking back, you know, and I've been in therapy and everything for lots of things that have happened in the past. And, you know, looking back, I really would have been suffering from some sort of postnatal depression,
mm-hmm.
mild, but definitely there. And I was really sad about the life that, you know, that was before kids. And I was a bit resentful, and just went through a really hard stage. And it was a weird time, because looking back, I was sort of thinking, that's it, I'll show them. I don't know who them was, mind you, but I thought, that's it, I'll show them. I'm going to show them that I can do it all, and I can, you know, still, you know, drink the way that I did and everything else. So I would drink once I got past the breastfeeding stage, you know. I would drink most days again, went back to drinking most days, and sort of kept up the same pace of drinking as what I had before. But of course, the difference now was that I was drinking alone, standing at the kitchen bench, folding the washing, doing the dishes, you know, downing a bottle of wine, and really doing it. You know, there's lots of debate about the right reasons to drink and the wrong reasons to drink, and everyone has their thoughts on that. But I suppose if you compare it to what I was doing before, which was drinking socially to enhance an already good experience, mm-hmm. and not drinking because I was sad or lonely, but, you know, I was using alcohol really after the kids were born as a way to sort of numb out the fact that I was feeling so sad, you know. So I just started using it in the wrong way, and drinking alone. It was always the drinking alone that really worried me the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I started, my husband and I, once again, we never really fought about it, because I was a, if there is such a thing, I was a fantastic drunk person, because you really couldn't tell. I was never a messy drunk. Super high functioning, got to the stage where he would come home from work and quite often I would have downed a bottle of wine already and he wouldn't even know. Mm-hmm. And I would go over to, you know, where the wine was kept and pretend to be opening my first bottle, you know, when he got home. And then I started to do those silly things like taking the recycling bin out. And he was like, oh, she's doing extra chores around the house. Fantastic. But really, I was just trying to hide the fact that it was so heavy. Yeah. And it was interesting too, because I just started drinking differently. So I found that I developed this habit of, like, I had my wine and my wine glasses in this cupboard in the kitchen and I wouldn't bring it out onto the bench. You know, it was like I was ashamed that I was, you know, drinking wine. So I would go over to the cupboard and I would stand there drinking in the cupboard. Damien and my kids, you know, they couldn't see what I was doing. But the irony really is that Damien's my husband, obviously, he never had a go at me about my drinking because I was so high functioning. He never really realized it was a problem. So I didn't need to do that. I didn't need to have a drinking cupboard where I stood there and drank, but it was almost like I was hiding it from myself. I was ashamed about what I was doing. So it just, I felt more comfortable having it out of everyone's sight. And then really it all came to a head one day when it was a Saturday afternoon and my grandmother had just passed away and I had been put in charge of doing her slideshow for the funeral. So, you know, collating all the photos and putting it to music and everything. And I'd said to Damien, look, we had two boys by this stage, two very bouncy, energetic boys. And I'd said to him, listen, I need to go up into the study and get this presentation done because I need to have it to the funeral directors by Monday morning. So I'm just going to spend the afternoon getting this done, scanning all the photos. And I took a bottle of champagne with me up into the study because I was pretty much incapable of doing anything like emotional or sad without the numbing effects of the alcohol. It's funny, you don't realize it at the time, but you look back and you think, gosh, I really couldn't. Like everything was a reason to drink, mm-hmm. you know? I'm there doing my grandma's slideshow for her funeral and I can't do it without having a drink. So there I am up in the study and I'm doing this presentation and I hear, and my husband, he's down in the kitchen, he's got our two little boys and he's doing his meal prepping for the week. So he was dividing all these nuts into containers and I just hear him say, hey, Nat, can you come here for a sec? And his voice sounded a little bit strange. So I walked up the hallway and my son is sitting on the bench and he's got these nuts around him and he had some in his hand and he's having an anaphylactic reaction to the nuts. And we didn't know that he was allergic to nuts. So this was a huge shock to us. So his lips had started to swell and he was starting to cough and his neck was going red and it was frightening. But I just remember thinking when I saw him, and this is like, it's not a story I enjoy telling, but it's just the moment where I thought, oh my gosh, something needs to change here. But I just remember for a split second thinking to myself, fuck, does this mean I'm going to have to stop drinking now? Like, I was annoyed. I was annoyed that my drinking had been interrupted by my son, who's having an anaphylactic reaction on the bench. That's not okay at all. And it was only fleeting, but it was there. He got the help that he needed. We had to call an ambulance. He was treated at the hospital. We now know that he's anaphylactic to nuts and, you know, he was fine. But really, it was in the days and weeks that followed that, that this little, you know, that inner voice that you have.
Yeah.
She'd been talking to me for a while, but, you know, she was like screaming by this stage. Like, that is not a normal thought process to have when you're faced with, you know, your child in trouble. That was when I got help.
I struggled with my drinking for about 20 years, but I was one of those rock bottom like drinkers. And when you were talking about how normalized drinking was when you were growing up, and really it's not too different now. You know, I've had other addictions due to trauma and whatnot that I struggled with over the years. I was addicted to meth for about 2.5 years, a very long time ago. And I always tell people getting clean from meth was 10 times easier than quitting alcohol, because you can just avoid it, right? I could avoid those people, I could avoid those situations. But because like alcohol consumption is so normalized in our society, it's on commercials, it's, you know, at family barbecues, it's just so socially acceptable that it was just constantly in my face, and it made it so much more difficult. And I think there is a real problem with the way that we normalize drinking. And I think that's what creates a lot of these kind of blurred understandings. It's really easy, like you were saying, when we're in kind of that gray area drinking space, to think, I don't have a drinking problem, but yet we're drinking every single day. And just because, you know, life isn't really falling to pieces, I think many people assume, well, then my drinking's not a problem. From there, when did you have the amazing idea to begin mixing up mocktails and creating this online platform that you have now?
Yeah. So actually, can I just go back to what you said before too, about the difference, I think, between, you know, meth or other illicit drugs and alcohol? Yeah. I completely agree. And I also think that what is really scary with someone like me, and without going into too much of my family, I'll just say, because, you know, it is, you know, private, but I was following a trajectory of this innocent enough sort of drinking when I was younger, then moving into this more problematic drinking where I was using alcohol as a vice. Mm. And I, based on what I've seen of my other family members, let's just say that there's one of my family members in particular who followed a similar trajectory, never stopped drinking, and is drinking in a very, very problematic way, full-blown alcoholism by this stage, or, you know, if we want to say severe on the alcohol use disorder spectrum. Mm-hmm. So, and I could see the writing on the wall, you know, and this is the thing with alcohol. Your relationship with alcohol can start off innocently enough. Mm-hmm. It can start off just drinking when you're young with a few friends, and then something happens and you start using it for the wrong reasons, like to numb or to make yourself feel better or to escape life or reality for a moment. And then our brains get used to using alcohol as a way to escape and numb and everything else. And all of a sudden, we don't have the ability to do it without alcohol, mm-hmm. you know, and that's when it really starts to get scary. And that's, I think, the point. Put it this way, I stopped drinking when we were coming into the pandemic, because mm-hmm. I could see the writing on the wall. Like I said to you before, the drinking for me that worried me the most was the drinking that I did alone with the kids as well at home. You know, I had the kids with me. And I could see what was happening in all the other countries in the news. And I was thinking, man, I'm going to be home alone for months on end. Like, if I don't put a stop to this now, I'm really going to be in trouble. And thank God I had the foresight to do that, because I don't know where I would be now if I had drunk my way through the pandemic. I really don't. Yeah. It would have been scary time, not just for me, but for my kids. My husband, he was still working. Like, we were able to keep, his business open. So he was gone 12 hours a day during the pandemic, and it was just the kids and I at home alone for months and months on end. And they were some really dark times. But had I thrown alcohol in the mix, wow. I mean, yeah, I don't know where I would be. So
yeah. Definitely would have added chaos, I'm sure, to an already chaotic time, right? Fears were running high and there were so many uncertainties, especially at the very beginning when nobody really knew what was going on or even had any idea how things were going to unfold. Even people who didn't necessarily have drinking problems before the pandemic, I think that stress and like the same thing you're saying, being home, having nothing to do, not having to be at work all of a sudden, just, you know, the world coming to a stop. And there was a lot of mental health issues that were showing up that were maybe laying dormant in people before that, that I feel like had people running to these types of, like you say, ways of numbing out and avoidance of everything going on. Yeah, that is a huge blessing that you were able to kind of like pivot because of that into the direction you did.
Absolutely. And that was really, I mean, that's how we lead on to the story with the mindful mocktail, because, you know, there I was at home with the two kids for days on end doing homeschooling and everything else. And if I'm being honest, like early in those early days, just desperately missing wine. I mean, it was all that I wanted, because I didn't want to face what was going on around me. I was watching the news. I was, you know, hearing from my friends, the world's ending. None of us knew. We thought COVID might kill us all back at that stage. We didn't know what was happening, you know? Yeah. And so I had always been I'm a foodie at heart. You know, I love food. I'd always loved cooking and flavor pairing and everything else. And so there I am with like this love of flavor pairing, and this desperate, you know, this missing of this ritual of pouring this drink at sort of 5 o'clock, or let's face it, some days it had been 2 o'clock. And so I started making these drinks at home, these recipes. I would use the herbs from my garden and, you know, fresh fruit, and started experimenting with some non-alcoholic. Actually, I didn't experiment right at the start with non-alcoholic spirits because I was very wary of, you know, triggers and things like that. Mm-hmm. So at the start, it was more about, you know, herbs and fruits and everything else. And I just started making these drinks at home, and I really started enjoying it. You know, that became my new ritual. Instead of opening the bottle of wine and pouring the drink, it was, okay, what am I going to make? You know, put the TV on for the kids. They'd watch some TV and I'd think, okay, well, what am I going to make today? And I started, you know, making these drinks. And then, you know, all of my friends were in lockdown and my family were in lockdown. So I started taking photos of them just on my phone and sending my friends these drinks and saying, try this. And, you know, I just had such a great response from them that I thought, you know what, I'm going to start posting on Instagram. I'd never done photography or anything like that before, but I just thought, you know what, I need to divert this energy that I have, you know, that alcohol, I guess, had taken from me. And mm-hmm. I had all this other, like this energy. I was like, I need to channel it into something else. And so I started my Instagram page, and it was interesting because the drinks were always, you know, a hit. Like people loved hearing about the drinks, but what really seemed to resonate with people was my story. And when I started telling people about my relationship with alcohol and some things that had happened over the years and, you know, examples of what my drinking was like, and me thinking I'm going to put this out into the world and see if anyone else is like this. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, like it wasn't just me. I mean, a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, we didn't really talk about this very much, or certainly none of my circles had mm-hmm. been speaking about alcohol and how it affects us in a negative way. And I just came to this realization that there were thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people out there exactly like us who can't, you know, who have developed an unhealthy relationship or an addiction to alcohol and were looking for, you know, other people to connect with. So mm-hmm. the page grew really, really quickly. I connected with people all over the world who related to my story. And, you know, really throughout that year or two with the pandemic, it gave me something to focus on, you know, something positive to focus on and to channel my energy into. And yeah, and then the rest is history. I started the website and you know, then started working with brands here and there with their non-alcoholic drinks and spirits and things. And yeah, it's been one of the best things I've ever done. I absolutely love doing it. So I work part-time on it now, and then, you know, I still help out in the family business too. But yeah, the 3 days that I'm working on the Mindful Mocktail are by far my highlights of the week.
What a fun journey and fun experience. And, you know, at a time when we could definitely be focused on all the negatives that were coming forth in the collective during that time, I think it's refreshing to hear stories like your own where it actually created the space for you to learn this new aspect of yourself and kind of like birth this passion that you have. And so I think that's such a positive story in the middle of all that chaos we were talking about. What would you say surprised you the most about getting sober? Or what were some of the things I should say that really surprised you the most? And what have some of the positives been?
I think one of the things that surprised me the most was people's reaction to me, and as in my friends and family. So I got a lot of, oh, your drinking isn't that bad. You know, what are you talking about? It's not that bad. And it really made me sit back and reflect on how high functioning I obviously was. You know, here I am having 2 bottles of wine a day, but still being able to get up in the morning and parent. And it's a funny looking back, because in many ways I almost feel like I was putting on a show, like I was an actor on a stage. You know, like I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have this killer headache, and, you know, I'd feel like just queasy, like I wanted to be sick, but I would like put on this happy face and just pretend that wasn't happening, and almost like made myself like mind over matter type thing. Mm-hmm. Make myself believe that that wasn't happening and that I wasn't feeling so unwell. And because I did that, no one around me really knew how bad my drinking really was. So I think that surprised me quite a bit, just almost having to try and convince people that my drinking was as bad as what, you know, as what I was saying, because I was just so good at hiding it. And then, as an aside to that, I really thought, gosh, if I stop drinking, I'm going to lose friends. What are people going to think? You know, obviously when you're a drinker or a heavy drinker, you build a life around you that involves people that are also drinkers. Mm-hmm. I really thought that people would care, I suppose, that I wasn't drinking anymore, like that it was somehow going to affect them if I didn't drink. Mm-hmm. And I have just been pleasantly surprised by people's reactions. And I've realized that all my friends are still drinkers and they really don't care that I don't drink. People only care if they can drink. As long as you're not stopping them from drinking, they don't care. You know, they don't care if you're not drinking. So, and look, I have lots of conversations with my friends about alcohol and the effects of alcohol and everything else, but never in a preachy way. People can see what I'm doing. They'll get there on their own. Alcohol ever becomes a problem for them. Yeah, they would be, I guess, a couple of the things that surprised me the most. And then the positives out of stopping, I mean, there's too many to mention. Yeah. Really, if I can just start in the morning, just waking up, having slept properly, like not waking up multiple times, not waking up with that horrible, like dry mouth, like thumping headache, and even little things like, you know, I never used to take my makeup off or anything before bed because I was always just too drunk and I would just like literally pass out on the pillow. So I'd wake up with like dried makeup all over my face and, you know, like bags under my eyes from the mascara, and go and stand in the mirror and be like, what the, like, what, you've done it again, Nat, like what? And that's just a terrible way to start your days.
Yeah.
Like what a horrible way to start, standing there looking in the mirror, swearing at yourself and asking, what are you doing? You know, now when I wake up, you know, I don't always sleep 100%, but man, like at least I'm At least I can look in the mirror in the morning and I'm happy with what is staring back at me.
I find that even on my most exhausted morning, say I had a late night or I was up for whatever reasons, or I didn't sleep well because of dreams or all these things that interrupt our sleep, even on my like worst mornings now, that it doesn't even come close to comparing to what the worst morning is after a night of drinking.
I know. And you were mad. I don't know how I did it. I don't know how I did it for that long. I don't know how I did it with a couple of young kids who were waking multiple times a night. Like I honestly do not know how I did it for that long.
Well, in a lot of ways, I think alcohol is almost most dangerous for people who are high functioning because they can drink, like you're saying, so much. It doesn't raise any alarm bells. A lot of times, even within themselves, their life isn't falling apart. There's nothing to signal, hey, this is destroying literally physically my body. That is the more dangerous drinking because it's so quiet. It's so silent.
So true. It is just so, so right. Yeah. And that is the drinking that creeps up. See, other scary thing with alcohol, it's silent and it creeps up over decades sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, my drinking, how old was I? So what? It was sort of 15, 16 years of drinking. And when I look back on how I started drinking and then like that timeline of like, how bad it was getting, and really like two bottles of wine for many people who drink is like meh, you know, when we're talking about people downing liters of spirits and everything else. But the trajectory for me is, well, hang on a minute, if I hadn't stopped and I kept going on that same pathway of increasing, where would I have been in 10 years? Where would I have been 20 years? Just don't know.
Absolutely. Where can my listeners go if they want to check out some of these delicious recipes that you've created or learn more about you and your story? Where's the best place for them to go?
I would say my website or Instagram. So my website is mindfulmocktail.com. And there you'll find all of my recipes. And there's also a resources section there where I run through, you know, some of my stories and, you know, recommendations for the best non-alcoholic drinks. And then I also have my Instagram, which is The Mindful Mocktail. And, you know, if you scroll back through, there's quite a bit of my story in there, how I stopped drinking and, you know, some funny stuff, I think. So many sober people are hilarious because you've got to laugh, don't you? Yourself, seriously, because, you've got to see the humor in it all, I think. Yeah. So there's lots of fun stuff there.
Perfect. Well. And as always, I will have the links for these in the information box below. So before we close today, just one last question. What piece of advice would you offer to someone who is newly getting sober or who is even just thinking about taking that leap and getting sober? What is one piece of advice you'd like to offer?
I'll speak to what really worked for me. I'm a really big why person. So I love having the facts. I wanted to know when I decided to really look into alcohol and figure out why it was that I found it so hard to stop. I started looking up things like, you know, what is it about alcohol that is so addictive? And what is this chronic drinking doing to my brain, my heart, my mood? How does it affect my mental health? And I really think like education is power, like knowledge is power when it comes to alcohol, because so many people just don't ask the questions. I mean, for years I didn't want to know. There was no way I wanted to know how bad alcohol actually was.
Right.
But I really think arming yourself with all of that knowledge can at least get you in the right headspace to say to yourself, okay, it makes you want to make a change. It certainly made me want to make a change when I realized how bad it actually was for me. So I would start there, educating yourself on the effects of alcohol, and just start thinking about your why. you know, why is it that you're even looking in the first place? Because if you are, it's obviously not playing a great role in your life.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for your time today and for all of this that you've shared with me and my listeners. I really appreciate you being here.
Such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.